I have a memory from when I was very little of coming home from school one day to find my mom and younger sister playing with this set of tiles at the dining room table. It was this cool kit that had lots of different colored and shaped pieces of wood that you could sort and unsort and put in different groups. My sister was pushing piles of tiles together and then pulling them apart, counting them each time. Being the excited third grader I was, I pointed and went, "Mom, she's adding!" My mom gave me a stern look and said, "No, she isn't. She's putting piles together." I wondered after that why my mom was so protective of my sister knowing that what she was doing was math. I think now she was worried about scaring my sister off. What she was doing then had no relationship to the competition and scariness of school. It was just fun. But as soon as this was something she had to do, like homework, it wouldn't be fun anymore and she wouldn't want to do it. My mom wanted to keep my sister playing with math as long as she could so she could learn it was something fun. And maybe it worked, because my sister is now seriously thinking about majoring in math in college. Little kids like my sister in the glorious pre-homework phases of life only have one thing they need to do. Play. In fact, according to toy designer Jessica Zarin Kessen, it's their job to be playing. In the second story of our show, Jessica tells us about how playful activity is important to physical and emotional development, especially when that child is disabled. As a designer, Jessica was drawn towards making toys for children who have some kind of disability. I visited her at a product show on the Stanford campus and in her office in San Francisco. The Cool Products Expo that happens every year at Stanford is a pretty great event where designers from all different fields come together to showcase what they've done. I got there right when it started, and it was already flooded with people visiting the diverse set of booths. I walked past displays of software that helps you learn musical notes, a plastic lid that makes paper coffee cups spill-proof, and lamps that can sense changes in your mood. In the middle of the crowded room was this table, covered in colorful pamphlets, a stack of different shaped building blocks in all kinds of crazy configurations, these beanbag-looking things that had snaps on the end, and a plastic ring filled with beads. The woman behind the booth was smiling brightly at people who passed by, clearly in her element and enjoying the excitement of the room.
Hey, Jessica. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good. So what are you up to?
We're just getting going here. A few people have come by, nothing majorly exciting yet, but apparently we're open and excited to be here.
Jessica Zarin Kessen created a company a few years ago called Development by Design, or DBD. She and her business partner, Julie, make beautiful toys for children, but their toys serve a unique purpose. Each of the toys are specially designed to serve kids with special needs, and they cover all kinds of special needs, from autism to kids in wheelchairs to the blind. A lot of the products at the expo were more for fun than anything else, and clearly these toys were for fun too. But there was also something more substantial to what Jessica was offering. I was genuinely surprised to find out that Jessica's company is one of very few in the world that caters to special needs kids in the form of toys and not just therapy equipment. The market Jessica has chosen for her toys is a pretty niche one, but it seems to fit her personality like a glove.
Well, I remember being in high school and saying to my mom, when she asked me what I wanted to do, I want to combine engineering, art, and psychology. And she looked at me like I was insane. She's like, yeah, good luck. And I got to Stanford and they had this magical thing called product design, which magically combined engineering, art, and psychology, which I was like, wow, this is perfect. I'd always worked with people with special needs. I worked in pediatric wards in high school. I worked at the American School for the Deaf when I was in high school as a camp counselor, I guess is the best way to phrase it. That's the simplified version for kids who are deaf with a lot of other special needs as well. I was an interpreter and teaching assistant for Kathy Haas, who's a deaf professor at Stanford throughout when I was there. I mean, it's sort of one of those things I've always done. And so on all the projects where we had to like go explore and do need finding stuff, my groups were always the ones that were going off to work with people with some sort of disability. My first toy I actually did as my senior thesis at Stanford in product design. So our assignment was go find a need and solve it, I think was how they phrased it. So what I did was I decided to do a map for kids who are blind. So this was my brilliant plan. So I volunteered at the California School for the Blind over in Fremont a couple days a week. And within my first visit or two, quickly realized that these kids were not at the cognitive ability to be able to read a map, no matter what I did to the map. So it became a cognitive development toy instead. So the problems that these kids were having trouble with were things like cause and effect. Like to a blind child, it doesn't exist till it's in their hand. So you saw your mom get the milk out of the fridge, and you knew that's where it came from. To them, it didn't exist till they were holding on to it. So they needed to learn that they could control their environment.
The toy itself was a group of four interlocking squares that had a track running through all four. The child would put a stylus into the track, and as the stylus moved, the toy would make feedback sounds that could be recorded and customized for each child. There was one particular boy in the class, about 6 years old, who was struggling with the sort of basic map reading concepts, things like up, down, left, and right. Teachers and therapists had tried a number of different things, but the boy didn't seem to respond positively to any of them. Jessica ended up focusing most of her energy on him, modeling and remodeling the toy to try and make it better, trying to help this boy learn.
So for him, we had to go up, go down, go left, go right. You know, the teacher was working with me, and I would go back twice a week with a new prototype every time. And every time I went back, they would test it for me and be like, oh, well, if you did this isn't really going to help because of this. And I would iterate and continue and keep bringing things back. So I'd work with the music therapist and the teachers and the occupational therapist and the kids and the parents and anybody who would listen to me. His teacher, so he was sitting sort of on his teacher's lap, more or less, and they had this on a table, like a little kid-sized table, and they were using the square one. So as you go up everything, it was telling you which way to go. And so his teacher was doing hand over hand with him. So the little boy's hand was on the stylus and the teacher's hand was on top of it. And so the teacher would sort of talk him through it as the toy was saying the same things. And you know, the teacher, of course, would be like, so what does that mean? And try and figure it out. And eventually the little boy started to understand it and started to understand the idea, which was just a very, really amazing thing to see. I felt like I understood the point of product design. I mean, that's, I guess, the best way to put it. And I wanted to make products that would make a difference.
When Jessica graduated from Stanford with her degree in product design, she got a temporary job at Pottery Barn Kids. The temporary job turned into a permanent job, which turned into a job at Pottery Barn Maine, mostly designing things like glassware and other tabletop items. Jessica says she liked the job just fine. It was a lot of fun designing beautiful things. But there came a moment where it no longer felt like the right place for her.
The day that I decided I wasn't going to learn anything new, I started writing a business plan for my company. And so I did that nights and weekends for the first 6 months while I tried to raise some money and worked at Pottery Barn during the day. I was learning a ton when I was there most of the time, but then the day I was like, I'm not going to learn anything else was the day that I was, okay, I'm bored now, time to go.
But for this pretty ambitious business plan, Jessica was going to need backup. She had tons of design experience, but she knew she was lacking in the disability-specific training she'd need to make successful products. She was in a sign language group at the time so she could keep up the fluency she gained in high school. And while she was there, she met Julie.
I was doing this sign language chat group once a week, which was literally a bunch of kids in their 20s and 30s sitting around chatting. The only rule was no voices at the table. And one of the girls in the group was an occupational therapist, and I kind of knew what that meant, but not really. And so I brought her the business plan one day, and I was like, hi, I know you do occupational therapy with kids. Would you mind reading this? At this point, literally, I'd known her for a year, and I'd never heard her voice. She came back the next week. She's like, I love this. I want to be involved. And so that's Julie, who's my occupational therapist now, who I adore and is one of my best friends.
Jessica and Julie work in this pretty awesome building with a bunch of other designers. The walls are painted bright colors, and the layout of the space has a very modern quality. It's clear that a bunch of designers work here. Everyone shares a common workspace. They have separate desk areas, but there are no walls separating them. Jessica says she loves the kind of collaboration that happens when you have a bunch of designers all working in one space, even when they're working on totally different projects.
It's actually great because when you have a small business and you're working pretty much alone or with one other person all the time, it's a great way to get other people's feedback and other people's advice. So when I have a problem with an engineering thing that I don't know about, I can walk across the room and get an answer. Or when you're doing a small business, there's all these really random things that you have to know, like what the State Board of Equalization is for and things like that, which really there's no other reason to know. And so it's great that everybody here is sort of doing it together. And so someone always has an answer. And it's just more fun because honestly, if you work at home all day alone every day, you go a little loopy and start asking the cat for business advice, and that's just a bad thing. So it's a good, like, having coworkers without having coworkers.
The process that Jessica and Julie use to come up with their products is as organic and collaborative as the space they work in. It usually begins with the two of them sitting at a table together with a gigantic piece of blank paper between them. They try to let the ideas flow, even the completely crazy ones, because they never know which ones just might pan out. Jessica and Julie are innovators in their field, so they have to start with a no-holds-barred, completely free-form brainstorming process.
We start off with a very basic mind map, which is a brainstorming technique where you sort of write one thing in the middle and then you just branch off. And you can write crazy things on there. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, some of our things could say something really random like, I'm going to build moon shoes that make you bounce to the moon. I mean, that's fine. I mean, but those are the ideas that lead, even though they're insane, are going to lead to the good ideas. And then we look through it, usually with a lot of laughing because there's usually some goofy things in there. And we circle the three or four things that are somewhat could lead to something else. And then we sort of do more brainstorms on those. And then we start making really janky prototypes of things and figuring things out. And we're like, all right, well, that's definitely not going to work. And how about this? And, you know, we act things out and we draw things. We draw prototypes. We build prototypes. We do all sorts of things. They're usually quick and dirty. And, I mean, if you look at our snap bags, which are these bean bags that snap together, our original prototype for those were decapitated beanie babies filled with kitty litter. I mean, it worked.
Jessica has four fully developed toys that she sells on her website and in disability catalogs around the country, and she has a fifth that's coming out sometime soon. Many of them feel somewhat familiar but have an interesting twist, like the snap bags, which are heavier than normal bean bags and can snap together on these fingerlings that extend off the sides. There's also a collection of game ideas they call play packs, and a round tube filled with small beads called the Explorer Ring. I can say, in complete honesty, that as a 21-year-old college student, I wanted to play with these things. They're just plain cool. My personal favorite were the first product that Jessica came up with, and also happened to be Jessica's favorite, the Bumpity Blocks.
We have lots of toys.
Okay.
So these are the Bumpity Blocks. They're the textured weighted foam blocks. So the extra weight and texture gives you more control when building. So you can pretty much stack them in any way. These are.
Yeah, they look a lot lighter than they feel, which is kind
of
cool.
They have weight inside of them specifically to make them heavier. But that's one of the things, that's a challenge, because when you see a package like this on the shelf, it's hard for a parent to look at that and say, oh, those are going to be weighted and help my child. So communicating that idea from a package when you don't pick it up is a lot harder than if you have them out.
I've got a whole bunch of, so there's like T-shapes and X's and so
yeah,
it's
kind of Tetris-y. And the reason that they're weird shapes is because children with autism tend to stim and they line things up over and over again. So they'll just put blocks in line over and over. But if you have all these funky shapes, you can't really do that. So that's the reason for the shapes. Also just means you can build funky things with them. And you could feel the texture is very grippy and they grip to each other really easily. They're also all only two colors so that kids who get overstimulation from visual input don't have a problem with them. And if you notice, all of our colors are slightly off. They're not primary colors because a lot of our kids are older. And so their cognitive, emotional, developmental ages are not always in line. And so we don't want these to look like preschool toys. There's no pictures of Baby Elmo on anything. You know, and that's for a reason. We also don't believe in making toys that are stigmatized to be, these are for kids with special needs only, and they're different, and therefore they should have separate toys. That's not how I work. So things like, if you look at our Bumpity Blocks, they are textured weighted foam blocks. So the extra weight and texture in them give kids more control when building. So this actually came about because we were watching teachers use full cereal boxes with their kids because a wooden block is too light for the kid to control. So we're using full cereal boxes because that was the right weight for the kids to be able to control easier. We're like, okay, well, if they're using full cereal boxes, we can certainly design something to fix that. And then we added a really bumpy, grippy texture to them. So all of a sudden, kids who have poor motor function can use blocks when they've never been able to use them previously. But typically developing kids just think they're cool and easy to build with, and so they build bigger, crazier things. So it's sort of, that's the philosophy that we're looking for. That's the way we design. Universal design is the philosophy that if you design for the extremes, it's actually better for everybody. So if you look at something like Good Grips, the OXO kitchen utensils, those were originally designed by Sam Farber for his wife because she had arthritis in her hands and she couldn't peel the potatoes anymore. And this was a big problem. So he made these, the black squishy ones that we all have in our houses, right? He made those for his wife with arthritis. Now, those are the best kitchen utensils out there because they're more comfortable for everybody as a result. And we all use them whether or not we have arthritis. So it's sort of that concept that Designing for the extremes makes it better for everybody. So that's my philosophy of design.
When you're designing something new, do you focus more on the educational aspect of it, or on more of like a playful, fun aspect, or does that just sort of go hand in hand?
We do both. Definitely both are completely necessary for all of our toys. They're definitely toys. We're not trying to make therapy equipment. We're not trying to make adaptive technology. We're trying to make toys. But the fact that you're developing skills while you're playing with them is completely crucial to be in our line.
Jessica thrives in a place like the Cool Products Expo, where she gets to talk about designing for people with disabilities. It's a surprisingly small field within product design, and it's true that most of the other products people are displaying here are geared towards people without disabilities. Getting to share how important her brand of design is to her, and to disabled communities, is really rewarding. For Jessica, it's not people who have problems, it's designs that do. And the fact that she can help fix them just makes it all that much more exciting.
I've been to a bunch of conferences that are designed for disability-oriented, because there aren't very many people in the world that do it. And there was one especially that was an outdoors conference. So it was to get everyone outdoors, whether you have a disability or not. So my first time outdoor rock climbing, the guy belaying for me was blind, and the two guys I was with were double amputees, and I was passing out.
Did that freak you out at all?
No, it didn't freak me out at all. It freaked these two 15-year-old boys on the next pitch out a little bit when they looked over and I was passing out legs, I think. Didn't faze me on any level, actually. One of the guys there, he's a professor at MIT, and he has both of his legs amputated, says there's no such thing as a disabled person, only disabled technologies. And I think that's a really important thing. I mean, if you design things that everybody can use, it's going to help everybody. And it's not, there's no reason a quadriplegic shouldn't be rock climbing. If they want to rock climb, they should rock climb. We just need to figure out how to let them do it. And I've seen it happen. I've watched quadriplegics rock climb. It's pretty cool.
Jessica's toys have recently become available in the SF MoMA gift shop. You can also find them in special needs and educational catalogs, as well as lots of toy stores around the country. Visit Jessica's website, Development by Design, at dbdtoys.com.